What's going on, Cinemer Attackers? Welcome to episode 52 of Cinemer Attack. That is right, Derek is back in the house. And of course, we finally have the two homies back together. We got the man, the myth, the legend, Matthew Cantor, whose birthday just passed. Happy belated birthday, Matt.
Thank you, thank you.
And we got the man, the myth, the legend, the man who played the folk monster in Boggy Creek himself. Dubby Doubles, what's going on, man?
What's going on, guys?
Dubby, how did you get through the swamps in those movies?
Nah, man, it wasn't easy, man.
Well, that's
stretching along.
Had a little midlife crisis out there in the middle of the woods, too.
I saw that. You know, he even had like a theme song and shit. You know, he was just jamming the Johnny Crappitree or whatever the fuck the song was. I was like, damn, no wonder the folk monster fucking took a break. He's like, I have to listen to this song. Hilarious that we did this right after the Suburban Sasquatch, because I was like, is that the same costume, but they remodeled it with tits?
Yeah.
Close to it.
We'll get into it, too, because, we're actually going to be doing a director's spotlight on Charles B. Pierce in a few minutes, but it's been a while since we recorded, and I think one of the reasons why is because I kind of blame myself. I was like, I got to take a week off, guys, another week off. I got kind of hit in a rut where I was getting kind of a little bit burnt out of doing six shows every weekend. My other show was kind of getting in the way, too. So thank you for dealing with that. I know I could be a pain in the ass sometimes, but you guys are okay in the book. And, you know, that's great in my book. And thank you for letting me take a little extra time off from the show. It's just, you got to recharge your batteries sometimes, and it just happens.
All good in the hood, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because it's just been hectic at work lately. Because even today, like, I have to stay and do other people's fucking trash. And, you know, that just grinds my fucking gears. Especially when those people are still in the actual fucking building. I'm like, why the fuck should I be doing this when you should be fucking throwing away this trash? And, you know, they kept bringing pallets back. And I'm like, okay, it's 6 o'clock. Bye. Good luck with the rest of it.
Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. Fuck you. I'm out.
No, everyone's fucking not cool. Because I'm the one who ended up fucking stuck doing it. Fuck that. Fuck Home Depot. Fuck the world. Nah, I'm just kidding. It's usually not that bad. That was just one of those days. But, I know all our jobs kind of suck. And Matt's most definitely lately. But,
Actually, our COVID count's gone down.
Oh, yeah?
It's actually kind of weird. The other day I was in ICU, and pretty much, I only had 7 ventilators up and running in our 16-bed unit, and that was surprising. I'm going, wait a minute, this is low, this is nice. And maybe out of the 7 vents, maybe 3 of them were COVID positive. Usually it's all of them, but this time around it was only 3. I'm going, wow, this is a nice change. But every day this past week there, like, I had someone die on me every single day. It fucking sucked.
I remember. I've been reading the chat. I'm like,
yeah.
I was going to try to bring up. So how was your guys' week's been, you know? You know?
Felt like fucking Dr. Death over here.
Isn't that the fucking Scorpion release of Dr. Death? Or, you know, the weird guy with the beard on the cover?
Yeah.
Oh.
Arachnophobia. They're talking to the new doctor, and he's like, they start calling me Dr. Death. Jeff Daniels. Like, even though I'm not a doctor, so. But still, just every time I walk in the room, this patient just looks like crap, and you're like, uh-oh.
Oh, you know, you're Dr. Sleep.
There you go.
You're there with a cat. You're following a cat into every. Oh God, this is getting weird and fucked up and funny, but sad at the same time.
It is.
That's flop, man.
Dummy's the only smart one. He's like, I'm fucking. I work at home. I'm like, fuck that shit.
Yeah, pretty much, man. I'm gonna be going back to SOD here soon, though. There again, with this stuff getting better, we're gonna probably, which will be nice change, though. I'm getting a little stir crazy, man, being at home.
You know, it just sucks because we actually just had another giant snowstorm, and I'm like, I want it to be nice out. I hate fucking winter. I hate the snow.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. And that's usually the reason why I kind of stay in on my days off, is because there's nowhere to fucking go in the snow when it snows. At least I can walk around.
You know. It's like when the snow hits, you got to worry about how the roads are. You got to worry about other people driving. Like, you could be a good driver, but some idiot could be flying down the road and lose control, and now you're in trouble. It's just a pain in the ass. Like, when the nice weather hits, yeah, I'll go for a drive, no problem. And that, look out the window going, nope, walk back, sit on the couch.
Even like when I don't drive, there's like nowhere to go, because it's like fucking usually like in the springtime when it's nice out, I'd take a walk down the Navy Yard. At least it's something to do, you know. Right. It's like, instead of fucking staying cooped up in your house, it's just like fucking 3 months of fucking pain and torture. You know? It's like fucking. Ugh. And, you know, it's kind of ironic because last year we didn't really have any snowstorms that much. It was kind of weird last year. It was like, there was barely no snow.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. But this year it's like, fuck. It's like even more cabin fever. Everyone's about to kill each other in my house. Plus, yesterday we had a fucking, my sister brought her dog over, her new dog. He was the funniest, cutest dog ever. He's wearing like a little Patriots jersey. The first thing he does is take a shit on Buddy's bed.
Oh no!
He's a puppy. We know. It's like it happens, and it was the closest thing to like the puppy pad, I think, at the time. That he's like, oh, you know,
this looks familiar.
You know, and fucking,
is this yours?
Yeah, well, find out, bitch.
It was easy cleanup, though. We just picked it up and then washed the cover. You know, it wasn't like, I'm just glad it was hard. It wasn't like, you know what I mean?
That's what she said.
they came over. He's a cute dog. They've interacted with each other. Ruby's kind of like, who fucks this dude? You know, like, I'm the fucking main new dog. Fuck this dude, you know?
He shits in my bed, too. What the fuck?
Yeah. Well, but he shit in Betty's bed. Ruby's bed was hidden. I think he was going to go pee there, but I was like, no, don't do that. You know? But, yeah, that was fun. You know, he's a cute little dog, though. He's kind of like, he kind of looks like the little Rascals dog, hence his name, Petey. He has, like, the eye patch eye, you know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's a cute little guy. I like him. He's funny. Especially with his little fucking, it was so, he looked like a built, like, steroid Patriots player, because he had the fucking Patriots jersey, like a little Patriots dog jersey on. It was fucking cute. So that was mostly my moment of clarity of watching a dog take a shit in my other dog's bed, but, you know.
It's the little things sometimes, man.
Yeah. I'm just happy I wasn't the one who had to clean it. That's all that matters. It usually is me, but yeah. That's about it, you know. It was like fucking crazy. It's just been Home Depot. You want to come to work on Sunday, Saturdays now? And I'm like, yeah, why not? You know, I actually got to work a little bit later. I don't have to start till 9, though, so at least that's good. But, yeah, that's enough of my bitching about work and, you know, the surviving of suburban Sasquatch and aka surviving like Mike Merriman, who's kind of like suburban Sasquatch in a way. Oh, Mike drives me insane sometimes.
He's like, I don't like anything.
Yeah. That's why I'm glad you guys just do one show. You're like, fuck the rest of that shit. I'm like, you guys have the right idea. You know?
Definitely makes it easier in the long run, man, because, like you said, life happens sometimes, so.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't imagine balancing six, man.
It's down to, like, not, it's down to three.
That'd be more doable.
Yeah, three, it's down to three. I do, like, a few guest spots here and there, too. And it just sucks sometimes because pretty much the only time I get to record is these days. So it's usually I have to do, like, maybe sometimes three shows a week.
Right.
Which kind of sucks. And the prep sucks because then you watch it like one time I was watching Boggy Creek and the next time I'm watching fucking whatever the fuck I had to watch for No More Ruined Hell. Then I'm watching like trying to watch some of the shut my brain off so I put on Baby Yoda because he's so cute and I want to hold him. But, you know, that's about it with that. And, you know, I've been watching WandaVision lately and digging the shit out of WandaVision. Great show.
I've been hearing good things on that one.
Yeah, it just got. I had to actually watch the latest episode of that, but I'm like, kind of mind blown what they're doing with that, and I'm loving it because those Marvel TV shows are setting. They're like setting up like the movies that are coming out for Phase 4. And
now, does WandaVision take place after Infinity War?
Takes place 3 weeks after Endgame.
All right, I'm going to talk to you afterwards because I don't want to spoil anything or for anybody. Because I haven't watched WandaVision yet, and I'm trying to figure out how the fuck did they bring him back? Because he dies from the stone getting removed from his head. Do they answer that in WandaVision, though?
At the moment, not yet, but I feel like... I could talk to you off air. We'll talk about that on our first break, which will be coming very soon, actually, because, you know, yeah, but I really dig it. We'll get a little bit more on that off air, but, yeah, Charles B. Pierce, guys, director that I feel is kind of underrated in the realm of cinema in general, because he started to put out some interest in films, like, even back in the day, like, it's kind of like, when we're gonna talk about Boggy Creek, that's kind of a game changer of a movie, because so many movies, like, from, like, Blair Witch on.
Definitely.
Like, even on the back of the new Blu-ray, it has a quote from both the directors of the Blair Witch Project, Eduardo Sanchez, and, I always forget the other guy's name. What's the other guy who?
Yeah, they always talk about Eduardo. I don't know.
I can go grab the Blu-ray quick. It's right in the back.
I think it's like Drew Malvaron or Malvaric or something like that. But you know, you could do that when we're on break, Matt, because then we could like before we get into Boggy Creek, I'd be like that guy's name, you know?
Yeah,
you know, but. Yeah, it's fucking interesting, the aspect where, you know, he did, like semi, like, documentary-style films. They're, like, mockumentary-style, like Boggy Creek, and slowly, like, it still kind of bled into some of that shit in, like, Town That Dreaded Sundown. But then The Evictors feels like a fucking real movie, you know? It's like... Mm-hmm. You know, it shows, like, the growth of the filmmaker as we get into all three movies of this. And they're all different. And I'm going to say this right here. I don't think any of these movies are perfect by any means. But I had a blast prepping for these because there's things I love about these fucking movies to death. And we'll get into them when we get into them. And I feel like we should just get right into but first... Did you guys see all three of these movies before, or were any of these like first time watches for you?
I've actually seen all three of these before, so it was cool to revisit. Although the first one, I've never seen Boggy Creek on its own. I've only seen it on Mystery Science Theater, so it was cool to actually just watch the film.
Yeah.
One was a first-time watch, and that was The Evictors. I've had it in my collection for a while, just never had a chance to watch it. So this was a great opportunity to pop it in.
Nice, nice. I remember watching The Evictors originally on the DVD version because it came as like a bonus feature for the town that joined Sunda. But it was cool to see it get it like its own release because I think it deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into it more because when I popped in that blue, because it was the first time I actually watched the Blu-ray version, I was like, holy fuck, does this fucking transfer look amazing. You know, the DVD looked good, don't get me wrong. I'm like looking at the, like when I popped it in, I was like, what the fuck? You know, like, Jesus, transfer. It was kind of like, you know, the Blu-ray nerd to me, like, oh, that's great. Fuck 4K. You know, I get some 4K stuff. I watched Seder in 4K actually the other day, and that movie's fucking great. W, that's up your wheelhouse, man. Look up that movie.
Definitely, man. I was going to say, I actually have it on my list.
Yeah.
It sounded pretty interesting.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's about it. We're going to take our first break, play the trailer for, I think there's a trailer. It might be a trailer or a song, because there's a few fucking weird songs from this movie. I'll look it up, and then, you'll be hearing something from The Legend of Boggy Creek. And Matt will be back right after that to give us the review and let us talk about it. So we'll be right back after that. Guys, see ya.
Here in this primitive river bottom wilderness in southern Arkansas, along with deer, duck, crane, and beaver, lurks a creature that walks upright. Whether it is a man, a monster, or a myth, no one really knows. What we do know is the people around Pauk, Arkansas, say they have seen such a creature nearly 250 times since 1954. And that this creature, whatever it is, emits one of the most terrifying sounds ever recorded. Boggy Creek, rated G.
And we're back, guys. We're going to be talking about some Legend of Boggy Creek from 1972. And I did grab the Blu-ray, and it did say it was Dan Myrick from the Blair Witch Project and Eduardo Sanchez from Exits Exists from the Blu-ray interviews here. So, Exist is a fucking awesome Bigfoot film.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome that this movie helped inspired that little flick. So anyway, Legend of Boggy Creek, a documentary-styled drama about the Fauk Monster, a Bigfoot-typed creature that has been sighted in and around Fauk, Arkansas, since the 1950s. Now, if you don't know about Fauk, it's a little town near
Texarkana.
Texarkana, which is pretty much used in all three movies. He goes, if you go through Texarkana, you're bound to go right through Falk, because it's so small. And we're talking backwoods Falk. It's pretty cool. So what are you guys' thoughts on this little documentary-styled mockumentary Bigfoot film? Debbie?
Yeah, so like I said, this is actually the first time I'd actually got to watch this film without hilarious Mystery Science commentary over it. So, and, you know, it still lends itself for your own commentary. There's definitely some funny moments, man. I guess using a lot of these real people as actors. But it's just hilarious. Like, yes, it's cheesy and corny, but it still keeps you engaged. And it's really fun, man. Such a great midnight movie kind of watch. And just turn your brain off, man, and just see the shit unfold. And, that man, as we said, the documentary style, it was really not really done to that point. I mean, this is even before Cannibal Holocaust and a lot of other films that followed suit. So definitely influential, man. It's a legendary film.
Yes, indeed. And Derek, your thoughts?
I dig this film a lot. You know, especially, it's kind of mind-blown how good the transfer for the Blu-ray of this movie is. Or
indeed.
The new 4K transfer of the film. It's fucking insane because, you know, the shit that I didn't even see from the beginning, like scenes, like that when I first popped in, I'm like, wow, what the hell? Like, there was a frog in that scene? I didn't know that. You know, it's kind of like the scene where I watched The Slayer, and I thought it was a bag of oranges, but it was a clock the whole time.
That foggy.
You know, it's just, like, the first thing I did was throw away my Cheesy Flicks DVD, and I was like, goodbye. Goodbye, Cheesy Flicks. I dig this movie a lot. I do feel like some of the songs kind of drag the movie down because they have like a whole section where like they have like this whole bio of this one Travis Crabtree, and you know it kind of takes you out of the movie because it's like, why is it like 4 minutes? I think they could have definitely cut it down a little bit on that's it. I'm like, I understand like they have like these songs about these people. But it felt kind of weird. It kind of felt like oddly toned in those scenes. Like, come Travis Crabtree. Thought I was in the middle of like fucking the Rainbow Connection or some bullshit.
Sound of Music, yeah.
Thought Kermit the Frog was going to come out and start singing Rainbow Connection at one point.
The Rainbow Connection.
The lovers, the dreamers, and me.
And me.
But you know what I mean. It felt like, weird that they had like these big giant like musical sound pieces, like montage scenes in the middle of like a mockumentary.
Sick, I need to put the filler in.
Yeah, but I dig, you know, besides that, I dig a lot of the rest of the movie. You know, that's like my minor nitpick with the film is those scenes, because I do feel like they take away from the actual ongoings of like a mockumentary style, you know. But overall, I really like how they cast like actual like people from the area folk in the film. It gives it like that authenticity of the surroundings and like make it seem even more real than it is, maybe, like especially with the dude in the suit later in the movie.
No.
You know, I think they actually shot around that pretty well too, you know. They didn't show too much of it, so that, at least that works for the abilities of Pierce as director, and the actual film score. Quick side note, that all three of these movies are scored by the same person, and I feel like all three scores are unique in their own way, and Boggy Creek is no exception, even with like those songs that come out of nowhere in the middle of the movie, you know. I dig it for what it is. It's not, you know, perfect, but it's still a game changer in the history of film, and I respect it for that alone.
I love how this movie evolves itself running through the film. Like, at first off, it's just standing still. It's just moving slowly through the woods. You got a couple sightings. People are, like, staring at it or didn't really do much until later on it starts evolving more, where it's starting to get closer to Holmes, and then later on, my favorite scene is when the kid runs out with the gun. Uh-huh. He thinks he sees a deer. He's running through the woods, and then he falls, but he picks up the gun, and he's staring at Bigfoot. And just the silhouette of Bigfoot is fucking awesome, and he's just showing how tall and bulky this monstrosity is. And he's got the gun, and of course, that scene right there, fucking love it. And then of course, he shoots him and runs. But then Bigfoot disappears for a while, and then also he comes back again, and now he's attacking dogs. He's now attacking a home where this couples are, and he's like busting this. It's like turning into an actual horror film, you know, busting through the window, grabbing at people, and scaring this couples. And of course, they're all trying to shoot it and everything. So I love how he evolves from this normal little couple Bigfoot sightings here and there to a full blown terror at the end. I liked how that worked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fucking. It's just cool. Like, you know, like the whole opening scene, too, that I like is actually Charles B. Pierce's son plays the little boy that's running through the field, you know, trying to warn those old elderly guys that there's a monster. And you're like, oh, I'll just come back tomorrow, you know.
Keith Trainer, some dude in the woods.
You know. Yeah, you know, another fun fact that actually connects this one to the next movie is Vernon Sturman, who's the narrator, was also the narrator in Town That Dreaded Sundown.
What?
So, you know, it has that kind of connection where he uses some elements from this movie and kind of perfects it a little bit better in Town That Dreaded Sundown. But, you know, this movie's no slouch. The cinematography is great. I love, like, all the scenes of, like, the bug area is fucking adds to the atmosphere of the movie overall. Oh, especially
when they're showing the other wooded area too, how watered down, and he said only certain hunters can get through because you need to be very skilled. It just shows like the vast of the area, like how big this forest wooded area is. This thing could hide anywhere and be gone for quite some time.
Yeah, to take a break or hibernate or do whatever and then come back. Like, you know what? They probably forgot about me. I'm going to remind them I still exist.
When they shot at me, fuck you guys. I'm going to start destroying some shit. Knock over some potted plants and hit a house. And
I'm going to go attack this.
Pigs.
I'm going to go attack this whole house full of women. Trying to get myself a mate. You know?
Yeah.
He said he carried off two of my 100-pound hogs. Like it's nothing. Right over the fence.
Dude, they should remake this movie with Dubby.
I could do half of it.
Dubby could be the narrator. That would be awesome.
Sounding like Randy Travis.
Did you guys ever see any of the sequels to this movie?
There again, I saw it as Mystery Science. I do want to go back and actually watch Boggy Creek 2 again by itself, though.
I've seen the Mystery Science of Part 2 as well. I never saw the actual non-Mystery Science theater version of it.
Because there's actually another sequel before that one, too, that Charles B. Pierce actually never did. He kind of disowned that one. That's why the second one's called Boggy Creek 2. But the first sequel is called Return to Boggy Creek.
Mm.
It actually stars one of the actors from the next movie we're going to talk about, Don Wells, from Gilligan's Island fame, of course. Yeah, it's not directed by Charles B. Pierce, and years like 80, like few years, I think it was 85 when that came out. He's like, I'm going to make a sequel, my own sequel, and it was that movie that I never seen. That's why I was curious. Is it a Mysterious Theater 3000? Approved.
Don't know on that one, but the one that was released was.
That's what I mean. That's what I was asking about that
one. The 84 one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I heard that it's pretty bad.
Oh, it's really low budget too. Where it's got the three girls and they're all driving along, and the way it's shot too is just really weird. It's like, wow. They're trying to do that whole fake documentary again, too, with it. But the acting is so bad.
I was going to say, it's crazy the acting's somehow worse, even though these aren't even actors in this film. So. That's saying a lot.
So rough. All right, so let's get into some ratings on this bad boy. Debbie, what are your ratings on this one?
Yeah, man, like I said, just entertainment factor. This is a really fun time. Yeah, there's some scenes that drag, and I have to agree that the scores and stuff are really jarring and just don't fit at all. But like I said, I just love some of these interviews, these locals and shit. The guy with the cigarette hanging out of his mouth the whole time. He was like, I'm going to get him one of these days. There's just so many like little one-liners and shit. You can quote all these people in this. Fun little flick, though, overall. I'm going like 7 out of 10 as far as overall rating, but I respect its cult status for sure.
Cool. Derek?
Yeah, I'm kind of with W. I dig it. I dig it. I love it. It's fun. A few scenes do drag for me. They kind of take me out of the movie a little bit. But overall, it keeps that mockumentary thing going and goes for, you know. And I respect the fuck. It's a game changer in the genre that it's part of. And, you know, I think it just improves from movie to movie with this guy. And he made him no slouch on the Boggy Creek, man, you know. I give it like a 7.5 out of 10. I really dig it.
Nice. Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat with you guys. This movie was a blast to watch. There's some parts are kind of get they need to be left out, but I don't know if they needed a filler or what. And some of the interviews were kind of him and Han, but some were great. Like I said, you can quote these one-liners. Guy took my prize dog, and I'm going to go after him. Or these girls were shunned, and they were in shock until the morning, and then everything was good to go. Or, we found blood, but no one seemed to take the sample. Really? That was great. It's like, all right. But it was fun. I get this on a 7.5. I love the storyline. I love how they did it, the whole mockumentary style, and how it progressed the movie. Now, it didn't get a... for people who are wondering out there, if you want to own the movie, you can get like the cheesy flicks. But if you want the cool Blu-ray, you actually have to go to their website. You can't go on Amazon or anything to order it. So if you're interested, it's at legendofboggycreek.com. It's their own releasing. They did it themselves. They didn't have anybody else put this out.
Yeah.
And it's a combo pack. So it's got the blue and the DVD to it. And where is it? I want to go to Falk now. I want to check out to see if Falk has any cool... They still got any history on it or... What's going on?
They do, man.
Do they?
Yeah. I'm just saying, I figured they do. They probably got at least like a little museum or roadside something about it, you'd think, down there.
That'd be awesome.
Probably. It'd be like that, like, scene. Actually, the best scene in fucking that Willow Creek movie is when, you know, they go through like that whole, before they actually go to Willow Creek, they go to like that town before, and they have like all the Bigfoot fucking restaurants and pit stops along the way. That's the best scene of that fucking Willow Creek movie.
Yeah.
Someday.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did it by the George Eastman Museum of Film Preservation Services. That's who actually, I think, pressed the blue. They did a great job on it. Nice
well,
and
it,
clear.
It definitely
and,
needed it. I was going to say, the original wait, transfer was so muddy and color was wrong and it was really bad.
Yeah. Wait a minute, did you just say George Eastman, like the guy from Anthropophagus?
Probably.
Only Eastman.
It says right here, George Eastman Museum.
I'm like,
Film Preservation Services.
That's all I think about is like the guy from Absurd and Anthropophagus, the actor. That's fucking great. Anyway, that's a great review. It's definitely a fucking... deserve the treatment for the Blu-ray for sure. And, you know, this one we're about to get into that Dubby's about to talk about. Wow, it's actually one of my first Blu-rays. But we'll get into it in a minute. Dubby, we'll be back with you in a second to talk about some Phantom Killer.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll be back right after this.
Jenkins, age 19, brutally attacked March 3rd, 1946. Howard W. Turner, 29. Emmalou Cook, 17. Bodies discovered in a wooded area on March 24th. Roy Allen, 17. Peggy Loomis, 15. Both found dead April 14th in Spring Lake Park. Floyd Reed, age 34. Murdered in his home on May 3rd. Mrs. Reed shot twice, but survived. This man's identity is unknown. He was believed to be between 30 and 40 years old. He wore a white hood and was known only as the Phantom Killer. World War II had just ended. In Texarkana, Arkansas, boys had come home to their families. Husbands reunited with their wives. It was a happy, peaceful time. Until the Phantom Killer struck. For 4 months, he held an entire city in the icy grip of terror. Now, Charles B. Pierce brings this incredible, shocking, and true story to the screen in The Town That Dreaded Sundown, starring Academy Award winner Ben Johnson as Captain J.D. Morales of the Texas Rangers.
We got a cold-blooded killer here. A man who nobody sees. A phantom who, so far, hasn't made any mistakes.
Andrew Prine as Deputy Norman Ramsey of the Texarkana Sheriff's Department.
The only thing we really do know is that we've got a very strange person on our hands.
The Town That Dreaded Sundown, a true story.
What is up, y'all? We are back with the second film of the night, and of course, continue our Charles B. Pierce spotlight. And this is The Town That Dreaded Sundown from 1976. So this was based on the story of the hooded berserk killer known as the Phantom Killer. Actually took place in the border town of Texarkana yet again in 1946. He left no fewer than 5 murder victims in his wake, and he was never caught. So this was based on one of the America's most baffling unsolved murder cases. So yeah, keeping it in his hometown here. I think everybody's heard of this film at least. It's definitely got some notoriety and, you know, could argue be one of the early slasher films. So what say you all? Let's go with Derek first.
I love this film. It has that certain atmosphere that it just starts up and I know a lot of people complain about the Spark Plug character, but when you kind of think about it, it kind of adds a little bit of humor to like this real life case. And because, you know, you don't want to, it's just something I complain about later when I talk about a certain other movie in the kind of like a remake slash sequel of this, where they take that movie way too seriously and then they have the shitty fucking ending of that fucking remake. That's the worst part of that fucking movie, is that fucking ending. And, you know, Sparkplug, I dig him. He's funny. It's a little humor. And, you know, he's a goofy cop. You know, it's real, because these characters kind of do exist in real life. Not to the extremes, but, you know, with the music and shit. But I kind of dig that aspect of the movie. It tries to take away from, like, the seriousness of the actual events going on, which I get in that sense for movie's sake, because it has to. This movie does feel more like a movie, too.
That's and, true.
You know, I love Andrew Prine and Ben Johnson as Captain Morales. Ben Johnson's like one of those actors for me where it makes me happy to see him in any movie. Of course, one of the stars of The Wild Bunch. Oh, he's so good as this sacred lawman called the Lone Wolf that comes to solve this case, the Phantom Killer. The cast is kind of small, too. Like, you know, actually, Charles B. Pierce himself plays Sparkplug. That's kind of funny. But we do have, like, a small appearance, smaller role for Don Wells from Gilligan's Island fame. who plays one of the victims of the Phantom Killer, Helen Reed. I think the score is great of this movie. It has like that fucking haunting theme in the beginning. And the look of the killer is iconic, because even if the killer actually did look like this in real life, you know, a certain other killer's first appearance was wearing a sack head. And we all know that as Jason Voorhees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, was Steve Miner a fan of The Town That Dreaded Sundown? I see what you did there, Steve Miner. You're ripping off Bob, and now you're going to rip off Sundown.
of the coolest looks, man. I've always loved the look of the killer in this film, though.
Yeah, plus the tuba scene. Come on. That's great. That's the greatest kill in all the history of kills.
And the trombone just sprint, I'm done.
Yeah.
So, Matt, what's your opening thoughts on this one, man?
This one was really cool. I liked the storyline, how they did it. And it definitely made it very edgy, where, of course, this town is pretty much under attack by this masked assailant. And I remember one scene where they're at a house. The couple's there. He opens up the window, and all of a sudden the guy pops out of nowhere with a shotgun, and boom! Like, that's fucking scary, because that could happen. You're at your home. You're at your safe place. You're almost like a home invasion type thing going on. And this guy was just going around the town just picking random people. It was so weird. And I loved the ending to this movie. Not like the remake or redo, whatever the fuck it is. It's still good, but this one was so much better. Because it leaves you up and wondering what has happened. Is this guy still around? Did he move to another town? Did he become back just being normal? Like, you know, I had my fun. I'm done. Or is he going to plan another killing spree? We don't know. But I had a great time with this. Again, that sack head, perfect. Just the way the killer looked. Hid well. So, yeah, I had a great time with this movie.
Yeah, it's fucking great. Like,
and that trombone kill, too, is the best.
Because, you know, it's weird, because, you know, what makes it kind of unsettling in that scene is actually no music during those scenes. Like, it's kind of...
You just hear that breathing, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of makes it so fucking unsettling, like, watching it. It's like, oh, God, you know. I kind of respect that, you know. You know, the whole, like, stakeout scenes, too, crack me up when they're all, like, staking out as couples. the one cop's trying to fucking put his arm around spark plug.
Like, what are you doing?
You know, I'm getting into character.
He takes his wig off and starts beating him.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
But it takes away from the unsettledness of the kills. That's what those scenes are for, you know. And you never know. These probably did probably happen kind of like this, you know. You never know. Like, these small towns have, like, those goofy characters.
And they you got to think that they have to find a way to laugh through some of this shit, too, with dealing with this stuff all day.
And, you know, it's like Sparkplug is kind of a cop on edge, because when we first see him, he's a fucking... just a guy on the telephone, you know, and, you know, he just starts, like, he just wants to fucking shoot somebody, you know, that's the thing. Black Prug wants to fucking pull out his piece. He's a terrible driver, as we see.
Oh, God, yeah.
Morales, so yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that was something, you know, originally the first couple times I watched this film, I thought the comedy took away from it, but it really grew on me, this viewing, and I can kind of see, you know, how it just really broke up the seriousness and just gave comic relief, man. I really enjoyed it a lot more this time.
Yeah, because you got to think, this is based on a real case and stuff, you know, in that aspect where you might be like, am I enjoying watching this true story of these people getting killed, you know, in that sense where we're actually watching, like, the kill scenes? But then you're, like, thinking, like, that's the way they bring you off the edge is with the comedy.
Mm-hmm. They bring you down a little bit, and then they hit you with something else. Bring you down a little bit more, then they hit you with something else.
Yeah, but, like, the whole scene with Dawn Wells is great, too, where she's just fucking, you know, she gets the bullet hole through the face, and then she starts running, away and shit. She actually is the survivor of the Phantom Killer, which is kind of cool. And, you know, are you Marianne or Team Ginger for Gilligan's Island out there, guys?
I don't know, man. I'm not going to pass up either one.
Both. Fuck that.
Human Centipede? Is that what you're saying?
You're on an island, man.
Matt would be in a human centipede with Ginger and Marianne, for sure.
I'll be happy to be the middle of that one.
Yeah, this movie's just fucking great. You know, it goes up for me every time I watch it. I respect it a lot more. And, yeah, it's kind of sad when you hear about what happened to Deputy Ramsey at the end of, where, you know, he stayed on the case, but then he died, like, a few years later and shit. Mm-hmm. It's fucking nuts. And I love the way the movie ends. They're going to see the movie in theaters, and you see the feet. Shoes. It's fucking great.
And we never see who the killer is at all. So we never know who this person is. Because they never solved it. So that's why they never gave it to us, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, this would be like a perfect double feature with this and Zodiac.
Yeah.
That movie. Oh, speaking of fucking tense movies. Oh. But yeah.
The balance is high on this one, man. I mean, especially for the time,
For sure. You know, like we said, he had that like whole like kind of resembles like that Zodiac kill from the beginning of Zodiac too. Where, you know, you have this couple of like lovers lane, and then all of a sudden the fucking Phantom pulls out and beats the shit out of them, you know. I think he doesn't even kill those ones. You know, those his first victims were like they survived or something, or I think one of them died. Maybe I forget. But you know,
one of them got away. The chick.
Yeah, they were beaten to a pulp though. That's the thing. It's fucking so cool. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple of days go by and the next murder happens. And, you know, then the trombone murder happens a few months later. It's fucking tense because you never know when he's going to fucking strike. You know?
Definitely had that eeriness to it. Like, you could definitely get, if you're back in the time of this when this movie came out, you would definitely be at unease. Like, I'm never going to move to Texarkana. Fuck that place.
For sure.
Yeah, and this is before the 70s when serial killers were more prevalent, too. Like, it was kind of unheard of in the 40s.
Right.
Way more rare, it seemed like.
Yeah, I thought they got the authenticity of, like, the look of that really well done. Especially the next few movies actually do that. Because, you know, these are actually both, like, period piece movies like this and The Evictors. And, yeah, they look nice, you know. They look fucking great for the time periods they're set in.
And that probably has to do with, you know, after looking at his filmography, he has so much set work. He's done a lot of set design for a lot of movies that he didn't direct. So that's definitely something he specializes in, man. His set and the environment of his movies is fucking awesome.
Yeah, he's like a better Andy Milligan.
Right. Yeah, that's a good comparison, man, actually.
Because, you know, he actually did, like, if you know about Milligan's fucking career, this is a little side note, but he did like set design and actually costume design, because as we know, Andy Milligan swang that way, but to each their own, you know. I actually spent money on that Andy Milligan box set, which I shouldn't have, but I did. But I was so excited for that. I was like, oh yeah, definitely mine. But, yeah, that's all I got to really say about the movie. It's kind of a straightforward movie in that sense, too, where, you know, you get, like, the kills and shit, and, you know, you get that whole... The only thing I remember that I do want to talk about is, like, have you seen, like, the semi-sized sequel, pseudo-sequel, or remake of this dub?
I have not. I have not seen it. It was, like, 2014.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of alluded to it. Like, I actually liked it the first time I seen it when it first came out. On some rewatches, you know, like when I first seen it, I was like, this is way better than 76. But on rewatches, I'm like, you know, it's kind of taking it super fucking serious. And, you know, it's Ryan Murphy doing the screenplay. And you know how most Ryan Murphy content ends? Shitty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I'm thinking about it, like, they kind of try to... It's kind of weird because they're like, oh, we have Charles B. Pierce's son in the movie. I'm like, did they actually get Charles B. Pierce's son? No, it's an actor playing his son in the movie. And I'm like, kind of annoyed. Like, what? Yeah. You know, like, what? What the fuck movie? But then, you know, then they have, like, the audacity to, like, when they reveal the killer. Because they actually reveal the killer at the end of this movie. Or... Yeah, I won't spoil the whole main, like, side twist of it, too. But pretty much the guy that they reveal to be the killer is like, yeah, my daddy was the Phantom Killer. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, movie. Fuck off. Mm. Fuck you. You know, it just pisses me off every time I rewatch that movie. Plus, it's kind of weird that they actually have, like, a Captain Morales in that movie, too. And he's played by Anthony Anderson.
Oh, God.
But it's like a super serious Anthony Anderson, so it's kind of weird. It's like, you know, like Departed.
And Gary Cole's in it?
Yes.
Like, what the fuck? I'm going to have to watch this now.
And Edward Herrmann's his final... Edward Herrmann's actually the best part. He plays, like, the Reverend who's kind of, like, boycotting the movie. It's, like, his last movie. You know, that he played Max in, like, The Lost Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, that happened. I still enjoy, you know, it actually has some cool moments. I actually like Veronica Cartwright in the movie, too, that one, where, you know, she plays, like, the main character's grandmother. Veronica Cartwright's, like, one of those legends. She's been in fucking everything.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. But I have nothing much else to say about the movie, man. Matt, you... You agree with me that ending fucking gets worse on rewatch, right?
Yep. Because they ruined the whole surprise. Like, they ruined the mystery. Like, that's the whole point of it. It was supposedly they never caught the guy, and that's how it is. Then all of a sudden, oh, I'm a son. What?
Yeah.
You know, so wait, did he tell you? Hey, son, let me sit you down by the creek, and we're going to have a little talk about my past. Back when I was your age, I was the Phantom Killer. I killed this person with a trombone with a knife. Back in my day, we had to wear a sack head, so I recommend wearing hemp. No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and you know, like they were watching the movie. You know whose feet those are, boy? Those are my feet.
That's my legendary foot shot right there, baby. That was a foot model.
What's your model shoes?
Jason, I got the bullet wound right here to prove it. Yeah, I thought that was a shot yourself. Shut up, son. That's my foot.
So, you know, the ending also, well, I'm not going to really spoil it for W because it spoils that whole beginning scene, too.
Mm-hmm.
It ruins that whole great beginning.
Oh.
It's like the way that, like, the second spoiler happens in the movie. But that's all I'll say. You know. Yeah, it's all right. But, yeah, that's all I have to really say about that.
We'll stick with the OG for now.
Yeah, OG, just, you know, Town of Dread, Sundown for life.
Oh, yeah.
You want me to start rating it now, Doug?
I was going to say, man, start us off.
Well, I have a blast with this movie. I love it. I think it's fucking great. It goes up every time I watch it. 9 out of 10. Town of Dread Sundown rocks.
Fuck yeah.
Wow.
Matt?
Yeah. Solid flick. Definitely got that eeriness. The iconic sack head. Love it all. I get this one an 8.5 out of 10.
Nice. We're all coming in about the same. I was going to note there's a documentary called Killer Legends, and it actually goes into the Phantom Killer a little bit. And they actually do a film festival every year in Texarkana and watch The Town That Dreaded Sundown, which I found was kind of interesting and odd. But definitely check out that documentary to show the little the real case. But man, I thought it was a good documentary style. There again, he kind of does it with the narration documentary style, but it's just pulled off way more serious and tense this time. Not as comical. Besides, of course, spark plug and shit like that. I'm coming to 8.5 as well, man. I've a fun time. This one, classic shit.
What's the name of that documentary?
It is Killer Legends. Killer I think it's Legends? On Prime. It was on Hulu or Shudder as well. It might still be on there.
Okay.
That's where I watched it originally.
Dope. I'll have to look that up myself.
Chew.
Choo-choo-choo-choo. Okay. Before we all get kicked out of our house, we'll be right back and talk about some evictors right after this.
It happened in 1933.
The court has ordered that I should give you these papers.
Then it happened again.
You keep giving me the strangest looks.
And again. And again.
It seems that you sold us that house without telling us a few important things about it.
Oh, you mean about those accidents?
It's happening right now. From the producer of The Legend of Bobby Creek and the town that dreaded sundown, The Evictors. Vic Morrow, Michael Parks, Jessica Harper, and Sue Ann Langdon in Charles C. Pierce's awesomely frightening recreation of a story so incredible it had to be true. A force of evil will terrify a town. It will make a young woman's life a nightmare. It will leave you weak with terror.
He's ever going to live in our house.
From American International, The Evictors. It's happening now and will happen again and again and again.
And we are back, everybody. 3 years into the future with 1979's The Evictors. Course, written and directed by Charles V. Pierce, and this is probably one of Pierce's biggest movies. It has like his biggest cast, like most star-studded cast. Because first off, the main actor in this movie, we got the late legendary Vic Morrow. Then we get future stars. The late Michael Parks is also in this movie, who went on to star in like a bunch of Quentin Tarantino movies and Tusk and numerous fucking movies. Michael Parks is one of the greats. And we got the legend of Suspiria and Phantom of the Paradise herself, Mrs. Jessica Harper, who W's like my girls in this movie, yo.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
Suspiria for life.
You know? We also have Sue Ann Langdon as Ollie, which is an interesting character, which I will mention, there will be spoilers in this one, because I think we got to talk about some aspects of this movie a little bit further, especially with the reveal at the very end of the movie, which I kind of love. But the main plot of this one is a young couple just married rents a house in the village of Louisiana, but they are not welcome because the inhabitants of the village look upon them. Well, that's a whole synopsis. What the fuck? I hate IMDb right now. Pretty much, yeah, this starts out with a young couple who just get this new house. They rent it from Vic Morrow's character. And, you know, this house, they find out how it's kind of a dark history, as we see in the opening scene, where we see these people get evicted from the house, and you know, they think maybe they come back to be the evictors, pun intended, And, you know, that's kind of the mystery, who's the actual ones evicted or kind of fucking with these people. And it's kind of the mystery, and then we get the reveals later on. And, you know, I like that. It's kind of like a psychological drama film in a way where, you know, at first when you're looking at it, like, is she actually hearing things? And then later on it's revealed, yeah, she is actually hearing him because there's a guy fucking walking down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that about this movie. It's probably Pierce's most fucking movie because, you know, it doesn't have like that mockumentary style. You know, it's kind of a big movie in that sense where the cinematography is fucking gorgeous, I think, especially when you watch this thing on Blu-ray. The thing, you know, I do think they do show a few of the flashback scenes a little too much in the movie. That's maybe my only minor nitpick of the movie. I think they could have cut down to maybe like one or two of them, or I feel like there's a little bit too many of like all the previous owners and kills and stuff. You know, you really need them, especially when you have that great scene where that African-American character who comes to, you know, do like a trade.
I felt like, sorry for that character. I liked him.
I did too. But, you know, you have like that great scene too where he tells the story and, you know, he tells like a scene. But then they go to like a flashback scene and it kind of takes you, like, you have to watch this like 5 minute scene now. You know, there's a few of those in the movie which I think they could have like left it with maybe like one of them instead of like maybe like two or three which there are in the movie. But overall, I think this is a great fucking movie, especially for, it shows the build of Pierce as a director. It's his most feel like a movie directed movie. In that sense, I think it succeeds in that, you know. And great cast. Fucking Michael Parks and Jessica Harper play well as the couple. And Vic Morrow is Vic Morrow. He's slimy. And, you know, maybe there's something up with him. And, you know, when the reveal happens at the end, it's fucking great. I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Matt, this is the first time watch for you, so I'd like to hear what you thought about this.
Yeah, I remember owning this on the Town That Dreaded Sundown original release, and then it got its official Blu-ray release. I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. For some reason, I'm like, oh, I'll pick it up, it was cheap, and just had it in the collection for quite some time, and I figured, well, since we're doing it, I'm going to pop it in now. Great time to watch it. Yeah, I dug it. I love the scene where in the beginning where the guy's coming to serve him the papers, saying, you know, we got to evict you from the home. And he fucking blasts the guy's papers out of his hand. And all of a sudden, like, poof, he's like, oh, shit. He runs back to the car, and it does like a whole standoff. It kind of reminded me of Devil's Rejects.
Yeah.
Where they were shooting everybody through the house and everything. And then later on, you kind of figure what happens later on. But I loved that part. I thought that was really cool. And I really enjoyed how it went back in time a little bit to other people owning the house. And they're getting picked off. Like, it ends up to being slasher-esque, where people are getting picked off one at a time in certain groups. The electrocution scene had me dying. I thought that was great.
Yes.
Just zaps the guy constantly. She's like, where are you? We're losing power. He's all frying in the back. And then he cooks her in the shed, just lights her on fire and walks away. I'm like, damn, this guy is brutal. But I had a great time with this. And I love when I'm watching it, I'm like, what's Vic Morrow's role in this? Because I'm going, he's got to do something. Because they were showing the other town, like, well, this one guy's running around killing everybody, and then we have the whole reveal of the girl in the wheelchair. I like that too. I thought that was really cool. And then when we got Vic Morrow's reveal, I'm like, I'm hooked. This is awesome. So I had a great time with it.
I'm glad to hear that, man, because this is one of my favorite movies. So I'm glad that you liked it, Dobby.
Yeah, man. I mean, I have to say there again. Theme with all his movies, amazing set pieces, and I just like how he does set up this environment. It feels like you're just isolated in these kind of farmhouse, you know, middle of nowhere, and it really plays into the isolation and I mean, to me, it's kind of one of the first kind of home invasion style films. I mean, it and I Spit on Your Grave, that kind of stuff. There wasn't a whole lot of just isolated in the house for the most of the movie. And it's kind of these kind of the mystery elements almost leans itself to a supernatural side, which I think is kind of cool. At points, you're just kind of wondering if this person's even real.
Yeah, man.
I highly enjoyed it. I will say I have to agree on some of the flashback. I feel like there's too many of them. I do like the flashback scenes. It's cool they're black and white and how they're shot, but it does get kind of jarring. It's like, oh, another one of these once you get towards the end of the film, but still overall, man, great flick.
I do agree the electrocution one I do enjoy, so maybe cut like one of the side ones out. Or,
right.
You know, some of them I do like, you know, and it's like when you watch them like all together in like a movie, it kind of drags in some scenes in that aspect where it's like kind of, but overall, you know, I get what he's doing, you know.
It's
great in that sense. You know, this is a minor nitpick, really. It doesn't take away a lot of points overall.
Right, and it still helps with the backstory and kind of, you know, lets everything unfold. So I see what he's doing.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole opening of this movie, like the way it's shot, does it remind you of a certain Fulci film? It reminds me of the beginning of the Beyond.
I could kind of see that.
With the monochrome.
Oh, okay.
The way, like, the color, it's, like, kind of black, it's not black
it's
and
like
white.
It's saturated kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, kind of monochrome black and white instead of, like, actual black and white. It kind of reminded me of the opening of The Beyond in a sense, too, where, you know, I think maybe a few, I know a lot of other movies did this, too, but it kind of, because it's like 3 years before The Beyond, I'm like, maybe Fulci saw this movie. You know, it's like those aspects of it, like, you know, Charles B. Pierce is really a game changer when it comes to these. Like Matt said, Rob Zombie probably watched this movie and was like, I'm going to use a similar scene in The Devil's Rejects, you know? You know, every time I watch a movie now, I'm like, yeah, Devil's Rejects, Devil's Rejects, Devil's Rejects, Devil's Rejects, Rob Zombie, every 70s movie, I'm like, Rob Zombie. You know, like, I watched Dream No Evil, and spoiler, there's a white horse in that movie, Rob Zombie. You know, but yeah, I love the fucking reveal, because that whole opening scene, all you see, you don't see the character, all you see is his glasses.
Mm-hmm. Because at the beginning there, you see the glass, someone's glasses with the hole in it, too.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool.
Yeah, and then at the very end, he takes out those glasses, and I'm like, holy shit. That's why they had a close-up on those motherfuckers. And I love that reveal. It's fucking great. It works. It still works. Because it's been a while since I watched this movie. And I love that about that. And, you know, I love that she becomes part of it. It's fucking nuts.
Yeah. I was like, what's going on here now? You said you weren't going to rent it out.
She's gonna fucking, you know, and you hear like the background, like, and then this person died and that person died accidentally, and like, holy shit, it's still going on, and she's the one fucking doing it now.
Yeah, I love the Ollie character, man. She truly adds a lot to it.
Yeah, she's kind of like, you know, like when we first meet her, because you know something's up, and she's like, she's a nice old lady in the wheelchair, like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, so unsuspecting, nope. Man.
That was, yeah, I did not expect that at all. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, you know, she's so helpful, too. She's like, I have a gun to give you.
Yeah, what are they going to do with the old crippled lady?
Little did they know. And the first like suspicion was like, why does she have a lock on the door?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's why. It makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she ends up, you know, the main dude in there, I think his name's Dwayne in the movie, Dwayne Monroe, he's like, I hate you, Ollie, I'm going to kill you. Because Ollie ends up being really Ollie Monroe, as we find out. And, you know, she's actually the lady who gets shot, and that's why she's actually in a wheelchair, because, yeah, that's why she's in a wheelchair. Makes sense.
Yep.
Looking back on that flashback scene. And fucking then, you know, he kills him, and he wears all his wig.
Yeah.
It's Norman Bates-ish.
It's fucking crazy. That guy is just a serial. He's like, I've been killing for so long, I just want to kill everyone now.
You went to the funeral. But I had to go.
I did feel bad when Michael Parks did get killed in the movie. I was like, whoa, he's like the second billed actor in the movie. He's like, whoa, that's fucked up. I wasn't kind of expecting that. I really liked their relationship, too, so it's kind of heartbreaking and tragic in that sense. Because, you know, they felt like they felt like a couple.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, like, she forgets about him right away. But she ends up fucking marrying fucking Vic Morrow.
Yeah, he was after her in the first place anyway.
Yeah.
He was liking her too, like just right in the beginning.
Yeah, it's kind of like this weird like tension building triangle with them.
Mm-hmm.
Which I kind of like that aspect of it too. It adds another dynamic to the movie that you don't see. And I love how that weird slime ball fucking guy from the beginning comes back to it, his glasses and everything. Like, hey, I was the guy that did the report, you know? Mr. Bumper. This is a great movie. I really enjoy this one a lot. So, Matt, why don't you give your rating, brother?
All right, this was a first-time watch, and I had a great time with it, and I give this one a 9 out of 10. I had a lot of fun. I did enjoy the flashbacks. It gave it more what's been going on, where they're killing everybody based on this house.
Yeah.
Like, this is my house. Get the fuck out of my house. I'll kill you. I'm going to kill you anyway, no matter who you are. I was like, damn.
Yeah,
I thought that was cool.
Nice. Debbie?
Yeah, man, this is one I just always thought was kind of underrated. I know it was kind of one of his bigger films, but where it never had a release or a proper release, because it flew under my radar for a long time, and I was pretty stoked when I finally checked this out. Of course, loved the cast, man, but there again, that cool setting. I like the Bonnie and Clyde thing of kind of some of those flashbacks has a cool feel, man. I'm coming to 8.5. I think this is a great B film, man. It's good shit.
Nice. I'm actually with Matt, 9 out of 10. I give it the same rating I do Sundown.
Nice.
I dig it. Like I said, that it's just a minor nitpick with like the fucking flat. It depends on the watch. Two usually, you know, because I'll admit, even like in the period I was watching this, I was kind of like that burnt out movie period where I'm like watching like fucking six different types of movies at a time. And, you know, it's like sometimes it's like, yeah, I gotta take a break from watching movies right now. But, yeah, I dig it. Like, I love the cast of this movie. It just dwells into that aspect of the movie where you get so many different characters in this film, and I love it. Jessica Harper, always love her. And she's great in the movie. I love her in this movie. Vic Morrow, fucking R.I.P., fucking great. Michael Parks, R.I.P., fucking great. Great movie, and great score by the same composer as the other two movies. It's probably the best score of the bunch, too, I have to mention. Yeah, I dig it. Dig it a lot. Check it out. Very underrated, in my opinion.
The Evictors.
That was the Charles B. Pierce show, guys.
Hell fun. Yeah, man.
We did it. We did it. We made it through another episode.
Woohoo!
I don't know what we're going to do next, though, but we'll figure something out. Yeah, that's about it. Do you guys have anything coming up? Anything special that you want to pimp out? YouTube? No.
Not for me, good brother.
I know you just did it.
Ready for the next one.
Yeah, I hear you. Same here. I got a few guest spots coming up. Actually, doing a show that I don't know when it's actually going to be released, though, because they kind of edit these ahead of time, but I'm doing actually a show next Saturday where I'm going to be actually talking about a certain Jamie Lee Curtis movie called Virus. It came from a monster movie podcast. I did a few episodes of already. I did one on that's been released, Sector 7, which was a fun time. And we did one on King Cobra, which was an okay time. That movie doesn't hold up on second watch.
Pat Morita versus the giant snake. God, love it.
That's the only good part of the movie, though. I'll get more into that in a minute, but yeah, that's about it. It's good stuff. That's it for me. You know, check us out on Dark Discussions Network. We're having a ball over there. It's great. We actually gonna clap our hands because we made it to the number 2 spot after like 35 years of not making any fucking top 10s.
Thank you everybody for watching.
Thank you for listening. Or, you know, Suburban Sasquatch is the one that made us get it finally. Which is weird. Maybe we should just start doing way shitty movie commentaries.
You know I'm always down, man. Always a fun time.
Yeah, for sure. But we're gonna get out of here. We're gonna leave you off with maybe some music from Boggy Creek, if we could find it. Maybe some music from one of the movies. Or W, just you surprised the shit out of me. You know what to do, brother. You always pick some good shit.
Appreciate it.
But yeah, we're gonna get out of here, and we'll see you in the next episode, guys. So see you soon.
Peace. Later, guys.
My Texicana baby, do I love her, Lordy love. Her pappy came from Texas and her ma from Arkansas. I'm twisted round her finger like a little piece of string, and yet I'm satisfied because she's such a precious thing. If she hauled off and slapped me, I would never feel the sting. She's my Texicana baby. She's my Texicana baby, do I love her, Lordy love. Her pappy came from Texas and her ma from Arkansas. She's pretty as a picture and you ought to hear her name. It's sweet as sorghum syrup and good old blue ribbon cane. She gives me lots of sugar and she never spills a grain. She's my Texicana baby. My Texicana baby, do I love her, Lordy Lord. Her pappy came from Texas and her ma from Arkansas. One night I went a-calling on my pretty little maid. I must admit to you I was a little bit afraid to offer her a diamond ring with one installment pay. She's my Texicana baby. Texicana baby, do I love her, Lordy Lord. Her pappy came from Texas and her ma from Arkansas. She's got two eyes that twinkle like a good old country star. She's got a perfect figure that'll stop you where you are. Why, every time I look at her, I think of my guitar. She's my Texicana baby.